And now it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, Candace M. from Long Beach.
Good evening. My name is Candace. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you for allowing me to come up and spend some time with you tonight. It's an absolute honor and a privilege for an alcoholic of my type to be invited anywhere. Certainly if I'm drinking, phone's not ringing, you know. One, because I've already sold it. So, that's just my story. But, before I even start talking, I just want to read this. I had grabbed the 12 and 12 from the back, but then there was one up here. I started reading this a while ago when I was newly sober. I think I was maybe 50 or 60 days sober, maybe 40 or 50, I don't know, but I went through a recovery home. And a recovery home is not Alcoholics Anonymous, is in no way affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous. But what a recovery home did for me is it gave me the opportunity to sit still long enough so that I could hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous brought in by H&I panels, brought in or when we went out to AA meetings. In any event, we were reading Tradition 3, and I hadn't yet gone through the steps. My sponsor elected to wait until I was out of the program. But I remember just loving Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember just being excited about waking up and not having to do what I used to do out there in order to have a bed to sleep in. And, they were reading this portion of Tradition 3, and I just remember a fear seizing my heart. And so I want to share it with you. It talks about when Alcoholics Anonymous was very new. And it says, we were resolved to admit nobody to AA but that hypothetical class of people we termed pure alcoholics. Except for their guzzling and the unfortunate results thereof, they could have no other complications. So beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. Says, yes, sir, we cater only to pure and respectable alcoholics. Where's the guy, the birthday guy? Woohoo! And, and it says, any others would surely destroy us. Now, let me share something with you. I don't know about you, but chances are, if I'm pure and respectable, I ain't alcoholic. You know? And so now, they're talking about beggars, trans, queer, falling with. I'm 4 out of 5 right there, okay? So, if all these rules were in place, I would never have had an opportunity to come and take my seat. But if you hang in there with me, okay, just hang in there, you know, you go to the top of page 141, it says, could we then foresee that troublesome people were to become our principal teachers of patience and tolerance? Could any then imagine a society which would include every conceivable kind of character and cut across every barrier of race, creed, politics, and language with ease? Now they're talking about the Alcoholics Anonymous, I know. Now we're just talking about the language of the heart. It does not matter where I live, where I work, what my family does, what my sexual orientation is. It doesn't matter. If I have a desire to stay sober and I'm willing to come take my seat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and do what has been asked of me, do what the people who have gone before me do, I have just as much right as anyone else to stay sober, to get and stay continuously sober. This has been my experience, and I'm grateful for it. I appreciate that the long form of the traditions were read tonight, because not only are the traditions vital to the survival of Alcoholics Anonymous, they are vital to my everyday life. There is absolutely no way that I can exist out there if I'm not applying, you know, that our common welfare has to come first. When I'm at work, it can't just be about me. There's a collective group of individuals that have come together for a stated purpose. And let me tell you my fascination with Tradition 2. I don't govern. Who knew? You know what I mean? You know how tricky that is when you're at work and you're governing and they don't know you're governing? I'm going to tell you. Wow. And, you know, in Tradition 3, a desire. Do I have a desire to be there? Where is there? Wherever I am. If I'm in a relationship, do I have a desire to be there? Do I have a desire to come into this relationship with honesty and integrity? And if I don't, I need to leave. Do I have a desire to suit up and show up for my employer every day and do the job that I have agreed to do? And if I don't, I need to make a change. It is not someone else's responsibility to be tormented because I am unhappy with the decisions I have made. You know, and autonomy, my coworkers are autonomous. They get to make their own decisions as long as it does not interfere with the nature of the business at hand. And that applies to a personal relationship. Now, I'm not going to hinge on the personal intimate because I'm not good at that one. You know what I mean? I govern. Just get that straight. But, you know, and I'm in a new relationship, so delete that from the tape. But, you know, because I want that to be a surprise when I break it out, you know. just the traditions are, if you are sitting here and you are new or you're not so new and you've gone through the 12 steps, you know, and you have not gone through the traditions, I mean, not just sat in a meeting and heard them read, I'm talking about sat down with your sponsor, gone through the book, or gone to a step in tradition meeting, grab a hold of someone. You know, it will certainly give your sobriety a whole new depth and dimension. You know, and I could go through the rest of them, but that's not what they asked me to come up here for, so I'm not gonna. You guys do it. But, you know, I just want to share with you, that I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good. You know, I have a baby here tonight, and, she was late, and, but that's okay. But, you know, last year at this time wanted to die. I wanted to drink. And I had been in a relationship. It was incredibly painful. And I would not leave it because I thought it was my soulmate. You know, and even though the police kept coming to the house. And, you know, if you be the alcoholic of my type, I told you I govern. And so, you know, and there were just a lot of behaviors going on in that relationship that were not in accordance with the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been taught to live a certain way here. And I can tell you that all of that went out the window when I got into this relationship. And it was truly about making it work. We're going to make this happen. You know, and I have invested too much time. And, you know, and then there was, it was verbally abusive. It was physically abusive. And I initiated the violence. And, you know, it was a lot of secrets. I had a lot of secrets going on last year. And, I would go to meetings and talk, and my partner would be in the front row, and, you know, we'd smile lovingly at each other, and I would have long sleeves on because there would be bruises, you know, and I'm talking about living a new way of life, and what ended up happening is it was really bad, and so we got engaged. and so, tell me I'm not into the solution, and so, you know, we got engaged for 6 days, and, that was all we could stomach, and, you know, so we made a decision to just leave it alone, and it was painful, and so I do what I, you know, have always done. I got into another relationship 6 days later, you know, we're going to fix it, you know, and that was bad, and it was violent as well, and the end result of that, you know, is what I had to learn through that, those experiences, is that there is no outside solution to an inside problem. That I have to have a God of my own understanding, that I can't just talk about having a relationship with a higher power. I have to truly affect the relationship, and I have to give the time to the relationship with my God that I was given to that sick relationship, or that I give to my friendships, or that I give to the ladies that I sponsor. You know, I have to put in the same type of work, because truly everything I do depends on that relationship. And it was hard. You know, it was hard for me. At the time that relationship ended, my sponsor was very sick. I had to make a sponsorship change, and my job ended. You know, and I didn't understand, because when you're so in it, you cannot see that it's all for a higher good. I just knew it was a lot of pain, and I was in a lot of fear because I was ego-driven, and I was unable to just surrender and go to my God and know that it would be taken care of. You know, but the end result was, there's a line in the Big Book, and ooh, it used to piss me off, and now I'm in acceptance, you know, and it says, we made our own misery, God didn't do it. That's a hard pill to swallow. That's a hard pill to swallow, to look back on everything, to know that I wanted to give up the life that I have known, that has given me so much joy, so much freedom, behind something that was not going to work anyway. What I have found is that if something is meant to be, it's going to be no matter what, and if it's not, there's no, it doesn't matter what you do, it's not going to work out. You know, and I'm grateful. So I feel good. I feel good tonight, and it's been a long road to come out of that. You know, it's been a very long road, and this relationship I'm in is new, just sanctioned today by my sponsor. There have been some rules, no contact, no, don't talk. You know what I mean? I thought, okay, here we go. You know, but because I get a lot of control. So we're doing new behaviors, and I'm excited. And if it doesn't work, it won't be because we didn't bring God into it. It'll just be because it wasn't meant to be. You know, I want to share three things with you. There are three of the most important things for an alcoholic of my type and without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a hope-to-die alcoholic. I am truly hopeless. You know, and the first is my sobriety date. It is August 16, 1995. I have 9 continuous years of sobriety. And I will share with you. So, you know, I will share with you that for an alcoholic of my type, it is an absolute eternity. When I got sober, I wasn't looking for anything continuous. When I got sober, I was broken and devastated from the disease of alcoholism. I was tired of living how I live out there as an alcoholic woman, of doing what I have to do in order to get a drink and enhance my drinking. When I came to you, 96 pounds, because when I drink, I enhance my drinking with things that keep me up for 8 and 9 days straight, and I like it like that, you know what I mean? And as a result of those behaviors, let's just say a nutritional meal for me was like a Snickers bar every 3 days, you know, and so hence the rapid weight decline. When I came to you, I was missing my front tooth because I'm a mouthy little alcoholic, and apparently someone begged to differ with something I had to share. And you know, when I came to you, I didn't have a strand of hair on my head, because when I drink, I start enhancing my drinking, and it produces a tweaking sensation. And so, you know, a friend of mine had told me that rubbing alcohol will sterilize anything, you know, and so I've already told you I'm a problem solver, you know what I mean? So what happened is I would start drinking, I'd enhance my drinking, and I would feel things running around in my head, you know. So I quickly identified the problem and immediately outlined a course of action, okay? And so, you know, I sat him down. I talked. I said, hey, I know you're up there. You know what I mean? And you can stay, but I'm going to sterilize you. And so when I would start doing my deal, they would start doing their deal, you know. And so I would get the rubbing alcohol, and I'd pour it all over my head, and it was soothing, really, you know. And then and then after a while, they became immune to it, like a roach becomes immune to Raid. And so, you know, I had to take more drastic action, and I did. So I got the scissors, I cut off all my hair, and I took a razor and just shaved it to the scalp. I would take T-shirts and wrap them on my head like they were fashionable turbans, you know, just making my own statement. And this is who and what I was when I came to you. All illusions, all delusions, and all facades have been stripped from me, and I'm grateful for that. When I came to you, I didn't have any overhead because I was homeless. You know what I mean? And I don't believe that you have to lose everything material-wise in order to come here surrendered. It was necessary for me. If I would have had one more silk blouse, I would not have come to you because I would not have had a problem. You know, but It takes what it takes. And again, I was broken and I was devastated when I came to you. You know, in our book it says, no one has sunk too low to be welcomed cordially, if he means business in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's been my case. It doesn't matter what I did, because I remember thinking when they find out how I have lived, you know, they're going to not want me here. But I would hear other people share honestly what it took for them to come to Alcoholics Anonymous surrendered, and that's my responsibility tonight. The second thing I want to share with you is my sponsor. Her name is Gloria Decker. She is the absolute love of my life. She is the apple of my eye. I have a tremendous amount of love and respect for her. And, you know, what she represents to me is continuous sobriety and continuous action. My sponsor had been ill for a few years, and I had briefly made a change to Karen G. and again, another woman that I respect, but my relationship is with Gloria. She knows everything there is to know about me, and I feel like this. If you have a sponsor that you can't tell everything to, get another sponsor. You know, it's too important Her responsibility is to take me through the book Alcoholics Anonymous. That is my responsibility to the women I sponsor. It is not to be their pal and hang out. And no, I'm not trying to get a friend. Get a dog, get a friend, I don't care. You know what I mean? But my responsibility, because we're talking about, you know, with my life is on the line. If you're my friend and you give me a suggestion, I may or may not take it. If you're my sponsor and I come to you and I say, this is the situation, can you give me some direction, then I'm going to take it. You know, I don't want to, except when relationships, I have a struggle with that. You know what I mean? But there's too much at stake here. And the third thing I want to share with you is my home group. It is the Bellflower Bigfoot group. It is a very active group in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a very active member, not only in my home group, but in Alcoholics Anonymous. I always have been, and I hope to always maintain it. One of my favorite people is Kenna. She says something that, you know, that I absolutely agree with. She says, I hope Alcoholics Anonymous never gets in the way of the good life it has given me. I hope my life never gets so good that I don't have time to show up to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I don't have time to get a commitment in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I have come to understand is that it is not everyone else's responsibility to set up the chairs, to make the coffee, to greet, to sell the literature. It is my responsibility. In and of myself, I am a taker. But in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. It doesn't say until I turn 10, 15, 20 years sober that I get to cut back. It says my life depends on you, being of service to you. In and of myself, I take, I suck you dry, I don't look back, and I always have a reason why it's justified. You know, I don't subscribe to the theory of I put myself at the top of my amends list. What is that about? You know what I mean? Isn't that the problem now, always putting me first? You know, because if I'm making amends to me, there is simply no room for you, trust, you know. But I'm going to share with you in a general way. I'm just rambling, just talking. I feel chatty. You know, I'm going to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, you know, what it's like for me today as a result of continuous application of the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. When I was little, my grandmother raised me. My grandmother loved me. You know, I know what it's like to be made to feel so safe, so loved, so secure that absolutely nothing could harm me. I know what it's like to have that type of unconditional love because I've had it. I remember when I was little, I was afraid of the dark, and I slept next to my grandmother, and at night as she would sleep, I would watch her as she breathed, and if she would inhale, I would inhale. She would exhale, I would exhale, because if she died, I wanted to die with her. That is the depth of love I had for my grandmother. My mother is an alcoholic. She is an alcoholic by her own admission. She was young when she had me. She was not done doing what it is she needed to do as an alcoholic woman. My mother is very well endowed, and she believes in packing her pistol in her bosom. And, you know, the way my mom would communicate her needs and wants is she would call my grandmother, and I always knew who was on the phone because my grandmother would grip the phone real tight and a little vein would pop out in the middle of her head. You know, and I don't know what my mother would say, but she would look at the phone and say, absolutely not. There would go the phone. And a short while later, my mother would just pop over and shoot out all the windows. Now, let's just say I was real clear that I didn't want what she had, okay? You know, I have other cousins and uncles in my family that suffer from the disease of alcoholism. It is not why I'm an alcoholic. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous clearly lets me know that I'm an alcoholic because I have an allergy to alcohol. Anytime I ingest alcohol into my system, it's going to set up a phenomenon of craving that will ensure I will do anything and everything I have to do in order to get another drink, period. That's the deal. It doesn't matter who else in my family suffers from the disease or if no one else. If I take a drink, I can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And I say that for those people who think their case is different. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm an ANDA. You know what I mean? I'm an alcoholic who's greedy, and I will enhance my drinking with anything you want to share with me. Okay? So, you know, so the way that alcoholism manifests itself in my family is through a lot of violence. Now, a lot of the members favored shooting. I favored stabbing. Tomato, tomato, really. You know. And, you know, and it's safe to say that when we all got together at some point, the police were going to be present, you know. Last year was like deja vu. No, I'm just kidding. And, you know, so I'll just give you like a day in the life of my mom. Let's say a holiday. You know, let's say 4th of July. My mother's an excellent cook. She cooks from scratch. I don't cook from scratch. You know, I am very meticulous. Some say anal. I say meticulous. And, you know, so I have to have the box. I have to have the light shining on the box with the ingredients. And, you know, I have to pour everything precisely. And if I go a hair over, I got to pour it all out, start all over again. That's not how my mother cooks. My mother just does like a dash of this and a, you know, a smidgen of that. It's like this fabulous concoction. So if my mother's cooking, I got to be there. You know what I mean? I'm going to any lengths for food, and it truly is going to be any length. And so, you know, the way you gauge when it's time to leave my mom's house on a holiday is by the music that's playing. I'll give you a for instance. So I come over, it's early afternoon, my mother's drinking, and the food's in the oven. The music is upbeat, it's like the Spinners, the Four Tops, you know what I mean? So it's looking good, it's looking good. So the day goes on, my mother's drinking, the music's still playing, it's changing, it's Diana Ross and the Supremes. It's not bad, but you want to start laying the plate and the foil out, okay? You know what I mean? Now it's early evening, okay, she's still drinking, the music is changing, it's now into Sam Cooke. Okay, you know what I mean? So you want to start scooping the food on the plate because by the time she gets to Billie Holiday, you know what I mean? It's time to go. By the time she gets to Billie Holiday, she has been drinking, she's been thinking, you know, about things that have gone wrong. She is sad, she is crying. She's only going to cry for a minute or two, and then she's going to get pissed and want to fight, you know, and so... you know, so I'm going to get a holiday meal, but it may come with a little something extra, you know. And I remember when I started drinking, I was in junior high. My friends were drinking and having a good time. I wanted to have a good time, too. It was very simple in the beginning. But what happens for me is that when I take a drink of alcohol, I cease to care about you. Matter of fact, I don't care about you before I take the drink. Once I take the drink, I'm inclined to share with you that I don't care about you. You know, so... You know, so please resist the urge to pull me to the side and share with me how I have wronged you and how I have imposed myself, because I really don't care. You know, but I would look at my friends and they would like have tear-stained faces and they wanted to tell me what I had done. And, you know, and I'd look at them very intent-like as if we were one, you know, just get that whole mood going on. And they would talk to me for 2 minutes or 20 minutes. It didn't matter. My response was always the same. I'd look at them and I would say, well, that's unfortunate. You know what I mean? It just didn't matter because I didn't care. And, you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about how we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate seemingly without provocation. So not only am I mashing toes, but I'm wearing the highest of heels at all times. You know, and until I get into the work in Alcoholics Anonymous, until I start living from column 4, it is never my fault. I just think you need to turn it over pretty much, you know. So at this point, I'm drinking. I enhance my drinking with other things that I don't go into because I truly believe in singleness of purpose, and it's not important to my core. I am an alcoholic, you know, and I am doing this deal. I remember working at this department store, and it was a real nice department store, and at that time in my life, I believed never work any place you can't shop, you know, and so what they'll do when you work in retail is they'll schedule you on the weekends, and normally I don't have a problem with that, but this particular weekend there was a party that equated to free booze. And, you know, so at this point in my life, the writing's on the wall. It's not about suiting up, showing up, sense of obligation, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm going to the party. I got to call in. But I can't just cold call. Oh, no. I got to get in a character. You know what I mean? So as I go home, I'm standing in front of the mirror. I can feel the sickness descend upon me so that by the time I go to lift the receiver, I can barely hold it because I'm in a weakened condition, you know. And I remember holding the phone. I called and waiting for my boss, and I could barely hold it because, you know, it's got to be authentic. But the adrenaline's pumping because I know I'm about to lie. And my boss got on the phone, and I was ready, and he put me on hold. Oh, I was so insulted. Oh, my God. Here I took the time to come up with this story for you, and the most you could do is put me on hold. Oh, no, that was not going to work. And so, you know, I slammed the phone down, and I went on to the party, and I look back on my drinking history, and that's how I drank. I do what I want to do when I want to do it, and I don't stop until I'm done doing it. And if you hang out with me, you're going to do what I want to do, too, or you're going to get gone, period. I am a team player, my team, you know. So so I remember the following year, I was living with my godmother, and she had just purchased her Mercedes maybe 6 months prior. She was leaving for a week to attend a business conference. She did what any adult would do with their vehicle. Took her car, parked it in her driveway, and took her keys, put them in the candy dish in her home. Only thing missing from this equation was me. Now, as luck would have it, I was going out to a club that night, and what better way to roll up in a club than in a brand new Mercedes, you know. And so I called my friend. I said, girl, we're taking the car, you know, and that whole day was spent with Candace and Self. How Self would be featured, what Self would debut, you know what I mean? How Self would be presented, you know, and as I'm driving the car consumed with Self, I ran into someone else's car. Whoops, you know. My hat's off to the person that has a valid driver's license and insurance, because it wasn't happening for me. You know, I made like I was going to do the appropriate thing, pull over and exchange information, but it wasn't my car. I didn't have any information to exchange it. I had a sneaking suspicion they were going to want to arrest me, you know, and that clearly was not going to work because I was going to the club. So now the car, the whole front end of the car has like a permanent grin, and I drove it back into the driveway, took the keys, put them back in the candy dish, went upstairs, called my friend. I said, girl, we're taking a cab, you know, because one, the party had to go on. Two, I knew when my godmother returned, she was going to be none too pleased about the car situation. She was, in fact, quite peeved. She had seen the movie Tough Love. Now, I've never seen this movie. I don't desire to see this movie. But the effect it had on her was profound, I can assure you. After seeing this movie, she was so inspired, she drew up a contract of things I was expected to do because I had wrecked her car. And, you know, as I listened in horror to her read off what sounded like 1,000 things, I mean, it was probably 4, but when you're in Self, 1 is too many. You know, and so she wanted me to do things like volunteer my time and give of myself to some charitable organization. I thought, what an order. I can't go through with it, you know. And, you know, and I remember being real indignant as she was just going off about the whole car thing. And I remember thinking, you know, why are you tripping? You have insurance. You know what I mean? Now, it didn't occur to me that what I had done is I had damaged her personal property. I had violated the relationship we had. I had just totally taken her trust and thrown it out the window. But when I do not live in column 4, it is never my part. I am not accountable. I always think you're making too big of a deal of it. Why don't you turn it over, let it go, let's move on. You know what I mean? I said, I'm sorry. There you go. You know, and she didn't feel that way. So, I remember the following year, I was working in Beverly Hills, and I met a few people, and they were giving me some just different career opportunities. One of them was to work for a record label. When I started at this label, they hired me as a receptionist, but, you know, I like to think of myself as a visionary. Some say delusional. I say visionary. And so, yeah, technically they hired me as a receptionist, but really I thought they were grooming me for CEO, you know, just sick. And so and I ended up getting promoted. I was in that business for several years, and I got promoted, and I worked in promotions and had an opportunity for several years to participate on a lot of artist projects and do a lot of things, and it was fabulous and it was fun. But here's the deal. The more I got promoted, the more I got loaded. Alcohol has to come first. As a member of my home group, Barbara, she says something that hits me to my core. She says, alcohol gave me the wings to fly, and then it took away the sky. Alcohol allowed me to make all my dreams come true. Anything I may have thought that I could have possibly wanted, alcohol allowed it to manifest itself in my life as a reality. I am not here because I don't know what it's like to live your dreams. I'm here because alcohol has to come first. And in order for me to be effective in my life today, I must continuously treat my disease. I hear a lot of people talk about a lot of things, and I don't knock anything. You know, it says that we have no monopoly in our book. But I will share with you that if I choose to do anything outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, it is always going to be in addition to, not in place of. That is just for me. That is what has worked for me. You know, so at this time, I am walking around, and I had found out that my grandmother passed, and my grandmother was my everything. She was it for me. She was my anchor. And I remember when she passed, I don't recall having any emotion connected to that moment. When I look back throughout my drinking history, I don't recall having any emotion connected to anything because I was never present. I was always loaded or preoccupied with getting loaded. You know, and I remember walking around at that label. It was very important to me at that time in my life, the title I had, where I lived, the parties I attended, you know, the friends that I had, what they did. It was not, my friendships were not built on common ambition, shared goals. They were built on, you're cute, I'm cute, we need to hang out. You know what I mean? That type of thing. And the way I judged my worth is if I were looking in a magazine and the articles of clothing featured in that magazine were hanging in my closet, I felt that is what made me equal to you. It has always been an outside job until I came to you broken and devastated. I have a very dear friend, Lynette. She says, if you don't go within, you go without. That I found to be true. It really came home for me last year. If I do not go within, I will certainly go without. I will be depleted. You know, so at this point, my grandmother has passed, and I remember most of the time I walked around that company, if you would have encountered me at that, in that period in my life, you would have thought I was absolutely the most self-assured, confident individual you had ever come across. But I will share with you that basically every day I felt like a little kid playing dress up. It didn't matter if I was in Chanel from head to toe. I felt like a child, an infant. And I felt as if any day you were going to find out that my mother is an abusive parent that lives in South Central and you were going to say to me, you're not one of us, get out. Every day I lived with that fear, so I had to stay loaded. The disease of alcoholism operates from fear. It operates from the feeling of not being enough. It operates from the feeling of my case is different. That if you know me, you wouldn't possibly want me here. You're not going to understand. I know you said you've done this, but I've done that. Alcoholism feeds on that. Alcoholics Anonymous is abundant. Alcoholics Anonymous is solid. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to look at my shortcomings, give them to a power greater than myself, and keep moving. Alcoholics Anonymous asks that I just do the best that I can. It doesn't say I have to come to you perfectly. If that were the case, I would have left a long time ago. I could not stay. I won't measure up. But if in every 24-hour period I give it my all, that's the best I can do. You know, and what I've had to apply recently that Karen taught me is before you leave anything, make sure you've given it 100%. And I remember when I was newly sober, you know, people would come in on H&I panels, of which I am also an active member of and have been for since I was almost a year sober, you know, and they would say, just give it a year. Just give it a year. Do what we do here. Make sure you give it your all. And if you give it your all and it doesn't work, then, you know, refund your misery. I mean, who wants that? Come on. You know, so at this point, I am without my grandmother, and I'm looking at my stuff, and my stuff is no longer enough. And for an alcoholic of my type, it's a very, very frightening place to be because my stuff was who I am. And I remember, you know, my disease told me that I was living and working in a world built on make-believe. I needed to get real. But I don't know how to get real. I know how to get loaded. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about why we drink. And to paraphrase it, it says that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That the sensation is so elusive that although they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the truth from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. What that means to myself is that every time I take a drink, the sensation it's producing is so superb, so magnificent, bar none, that even though every time I take a drink, it's causing me chaos, confusion, insanity, jail, always a bonus. You know what I mean? Every time I take a drink, even though I know this is what's going to happen, I got to go for broke. And then it's telling me that after a while, I don't know what's real from what's not. Why? Because I'm making decisions based on self. After a while, the thing that was the most incomprehensible or unacceptable becomes par for the course. My alcoholic life becomes the only normal one. I firmly believe that once you do something, it's not a big deal to do it again because the shock value has worn off. And my disease will tell me that I can come at it a different way. You know, and at this point, I resigned from that company, and I had a habit that was very expensive, and it has to be maintained. I am not a periodic. I drink, period. You know what I mean? And so I stepped out there, and I did what it is I had to do in order to get what I had to have. I exchanged myself I put myself on the market in exchange for a drink. You know, and what it involved is me compromising my dignity, my self-respect, my values, my beliefs, my dreams on a daily basis in order to get what I have to have. I am under no illusion that I will not step out of these doors and do it all over again if I fail to treat the disease of alcoholism. I'm under no illusion that if I am not firmly planted in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I will not live. I lived it last year. I had to find out that I cannot live the streets in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I gave it my best shot. And it was painful. I wanted to die. So I'm out there, I'm doing my deal, and I already told you that when I drink, I enhance my drinking. I'm 96 pounds. My weight fell off, and business fell off. And so, I went into a recovery home, and, you know, I didn't go into the recovery home to get sober and get my feet planted in new soil. No. I went into the recovery home to put on some weight, come out and make some money. You know what I mean? And I was there for 55 days, and I remember they would have participation meetings. And when I went into that recovery home, I hadn't lost everything. I still had a few Chanel and Donna Karen and Vitadini, and they would say, does anyone want to share? My hand would just shoot up. I'd go running up to the podium, and I'd start spewing forth all this disease, and they'd be looking at me, you know, and then I'd finish with a big flourish, and I'd go walking on down to my seat, and they would look at me and say, keep coming back. You know what I mean? And, but, you know, I'm so delusional, I thought, they dig me. Yeah. and I'm grateful that we are taught to be loving and kind in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was apparent to anyone that heard me during those 55 days that I wasn't even close to being surrendered. Not even close. But no one ever looked at me and said, you are one sick puppy, you better get on out of here. What they would do is someone would write their number down and give it to me and say, if you need a ride to a meeting, call me, I'll come pick you up. Someone else would pat the seat next to them and say, I saved a seat for you. Someone else would hug me and say, you're looking good, how are you feeling today? I wasn't ready, and what I've learned is that you are not done until you are done. You cannot hear until you can hear, and you cannot see until you can see. It is not my place to tell you when you should be done. It is, however, my responsibility as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous to make sure if you come in here for the first time or if you have come back for the 40th time, my hand is outstretched to you. That is my responsibility, to make Alcoholics Anonymous as warm and as inviting as it was for me then. It is not everyone else's responsibility to keep this deal going. People say, when do I get mine? I got mine the day I got sober. It does not get better than that. It really doesn't. You know, and I remember talking to the women at the house, and they were talking about their careers, and they would say, you know, what do you do? And I would say, oh, this is what I used to do. They were like, oh, okay, what do you do now? And I would say, yeah, this is what I used to do. They were like, yeah, got it. What do you do now? You know, and I would say, this is what I used to do. Now, it wasn't as if I were intentionally trying to deceive them. I was incapable of bringing forth to a conscious level what I had become defending my right to drink. So I ended up saying I was in public relations. They got it, you know. Tomato, tomato. So, you know, and I remember the women talking about going to jail. I was like, ooh, can't relate. Let me tell you, day 56, that was quickly rectified. You know, I have women that I sponsor that have gone to jail one night. That was their bottom. They came into AA. You know, and I thought, ooh, one night, no, that might have been a nap, but it wouldn't have been my bottom, you know. By the time I started going to jail, all my friends were there. You know, I'd be like, girl, I thought you were dead, you know. And you want to take a look at your life when you start going to jail and it's no longer a big deal. But see, what happens is my alcoholic life had become the only normal one. Because at one point, it would have been very unacceptable. I need to keep getting arrested. What's happening with that? You know, and so I'm in and out of jail, and I'm out there doing my deal, and I don't take care of myself when I'm drinking and doing my thing. And I had become pregnant. I had always said that I would never do anything to jeopardize the life of an unborn child, but I have told you that I am not a periodic. I don't have the choice of, you know, to just abstain for 9 months. And I know that women have. That is not my story. I had made the decision to terminate that pregnancy as a result of how I was living. I believe that I have heard stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. People shared that when they were little, they were left with people they should never have been left with. And things that should never have happened took place. I would have been one of those mothers. Because I do not do background checks with the people I hang out with when I'm drinking. And when I get the call of the wild, I have to go. So if a child is there, whomever is in the vicinity at the time would be babysitting. I did not want that on my head, and I knew I was not done drinking. I made the decision to terminate that pregnancy. At the time I made that decision, I was made aware via every news channel, every radio station, every newspaper that a member of my family had been arrested for a child murder. The person arrested was my mother. There is just going to come a time for everyone when your life is going to stand still. That time came for me. I remember when it happened. I remember thinking, looking at my life in that space and time, thinking the way I live now is the way I'm going to live forever. I remember thinking anything good, anything pure, anything whole, anything beautiful, anything healthy is no longer afforded to me. Forget about it. I had always thought once your destiny had been determined that absolutely nothing could be done to change it. It was not until I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, devastated, that I had found if I am willing to take certain actions that my entire life can be reshaped. That is why I suit up and show up for Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no way that I can stand before you tonight feeling clean, good about myself, clean underwear, always a bonus. It's not happening if I'm out there. I am at my best when I'm in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember going through with that pregnancy and giving birth to my daughter after 17 hours of labor. And she was so beautiful. Her name is Serenity. So beautiful. And I remember holding her and she would shake because she was detoxing. And it's just when you feel something inside of you break because I was not done. I had to get done. That is a painful deal when you want to be done and you are not done. Back in and out of jail, and I remember when I came to you, I already shared with you the state and the condition in which I came to you, and I remember being 4 months sober when I even shared with the director of the facility I was in that I had a daughter. She goes, "You have a daughter?" I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Oh, my God, where is she? We got to get her. We got to bring her here." I said, "I don't know." She gave me one number. It led to a series of numbers, and what they told me is that in the eyes of the law, I was no longer considered her parents, that my parental rights had been terminated, and I was devastated. I can do anything when I am drinking. I can keep the illusion and the justification and the rationalization going when I am drinking. But in order for me to live sober with the things I have done, it is not possible without the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not possible. I remember just everything inside me being taken out. Because for 4 months, I had started feeling good about myself. There were women there that had children, and I thought they could show me how to be a mom. They could show me how to do it differently. They could show me how to not harm my child. They could show me how to not repeat the things that my family has done. It could be different. And in one phone call, that hope was taken away. And I share that with you because if you have any reservations, you may want to let them go. You don't get everything back just because you get sober. We don't promise you that. We promise you sobriety if you do what we do. My daughter is 10 years old. I have not seen her since she was 3 days old. And there are days that I'm okay with it. There are days that it hits me like I just got the call and I have to process it all over again. I have to start from step one, that I am powerless. And if I am drinking or not treating my disease, my life is unmanageable. That I have to turn it over to a power greater than myself so that I can get some sanity restored and that I have to give my will over to that power. Then I have to do an inventory. The resentment, the fear, the sex. You know, when I got into the inventory, I remember it said, person, place, or thing that you're resentful at. Ooh, I couldn't wait. Let me just write down all the names. Why? Ooh, let me tell you what they did to me. Give me another page for her. You know what I mean? And then it got more serious in column three. What did it affect? Ooh. Was it my self-esteem? Was it my integrity? Was it my personal relations? My part. Ah, ooh. Okay. You say I have a part, I'm going to dig deep. I didn't have to dig that deep. You know, and I'm going to give you an example. This is fake. Don't run with it, you know. Because I said it once in a meeting, and there was someone there by that name. And I was like, oh, I didn't mean it. You know, what you mean? Anyway. So, example, I'm resentful at Tiffany. Please don't let there be a Tiffany here. So I'm resentful at Tiffany. Why? She keyed my car. What did it affect? My personal relations, my financial relations, my trust, my security. What was my part? I slept with her partner. She found out and keyed my car. Let me tell you something. unless I am doing these steps, it is never going to be what I did to her. It's just going to be, why you got to key my car? You know, period. That is the deal. That is the freedom I get from coming to you when I look at the situation that has gone on with my family, with the behavior that I have out there. I have to do an inventory. I have to get very clear on the patterns of behavior that attribute to keeping me in bondage, the bondage of self. Me stepping on the toes of my fellows. That's what the inventory is going to lay out for me. You know, and I remember sharing that inventory with my sponsor and her sharing back some things with me that let me know that my case was not different, that I'm not the only one that's ever made poor choices, but that if I continue to drink, I would continue to make these choices. She said to me something that I'll say to you tonight, if you don't ever want to live that way again, you don't have to, but there are certain things you must do. This is not a program of whether or not I feel like it. This is a program of action. I hear a lot of people tell me, well, you know, and I'm thinking about what? I want to stay sober today. I have people run up to me, oh, I want you to take me through the steps, I want you to do this, and I say, well, could you go home and read the doctor's opinion? You mean today? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I did. You know what I mean? So, you know, and then getting into step six and looking at the defects of character that contributed to all the behavior and asking my father to humbly remove those for me, making that list in step nine, getting the integrity, getting the freedom, because for me, I don't look anyone in their eye and acknowledge what I have done. I'm talking, state the exact nature of my wrongs, ask if there's anything I have left out, and ask you how we can make this right. One, I don't admit to it unless I'm on videotape. And even then, I may debate it. You know what I mean? But if I step to you and I'm saying, because I want to stay sober, I want this life today, I need you to tell me if there's anything I omitted and how I can make this right. I have people say, I made an amends. I said, how do you do it? I said, I was sorry. That's not an amends. That means, oops, busted. You know what I mean? Look forward to a repeat occurrence in about a week. You know what I mean? You know, and in step 10, continuing to take daily inventory, because what I found and what I experienced last year is when I stopped taking a daily inventory, the filth starts to build up all over again. It's like a thin film at first. And then if you don't do a house cleaning, it just gets so dirty. What's the use? Why stay here? Because that's how I felt when I came to you. I felt dirty. You know, it talks about the inventory, whichever inventory, 4 or 10, being a fact-facing and a fact-finding process to disclose and get rid of damaged or unsaleable goods. I felt damaged when I came to you. It has been a healing process that has been a long time in the works here. You know, and learning how to sit quietly in prayer and meditation. And what I have found is that doesn't mean that I have to just sit and be quiet, because I'm not always good with that. Sometimes meditation for me is chopping vegetables. It's where I can get quiet and I can just lift my mind to the power greater than myself. You know, and step 12 is not only standing up and talking, but it's setting up chairs. It's going over to a newcomer in a meeting. It's so important that I show up to my meetings on a regular basis, because there may be a new person that looks to see me in that chair every week. I may be the one person they can connect with. I have a responsibility. It just can't be about me anymore. It just can't be. When I was 5.5 years sober, I made amends to my mother. I didn't think I would ever be able to do it. My sponsor did not push it. It was a very, very, very sensitive subject. And she told me, you will know when the time comes. It will be all you can think about. I said, the time will never come. But the time did come. I was very angry. I did not want to live angry. I did not get sober to be angry and bitter. There are people here that are angry. I don't want anything they have. I want to be free, and I'm willing to do the work in order to have that freedom, and it is work to stay here. Anyone that tells you that this is not a program of work is lying to you, and they're probably doing some mood and mind-altering substance on the side. You know what I mean? Because then, no, you don't have to do any work. Just smoke a joint, you know, and that's not the case. It takes work to stay here, and I remember 5.5 years sober, I wrote my mother. She's in prison. She's going to be there for a very long time, and she wrote me back, and she told me she's found God, and you know, if I get to have a God, she gets to have one too. It's real easy to come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, get spiritual, and say, let us love you until you can love yourself. It is a very different proposition when you have to take these principles outside of the room and apply them to the people that have hurt you the most, that are closest to you. That is when you find out if you have a program or not. I cannot sit in judgment. I have done my fair share of things out there. No, I'm not going to compare murder to the things that I've done. But you know what? Everyone's disease, because my mother is an admitted alcoholic, manifests in a different way. She ministers to people in that prison. I don't know if she's reformed or not, but I know that she's touching the lives of those people just like we're touching the lives here. People are going to take what we do here, and they're going to take it out there in the world. I don't want to live from what's the use, the world is a bad place anyway. I want to live from I can make a difference. What I have found through my sobriety is that by being sober, I get to break the cycle of insanity. When my daughter turns 18, if she ever wants to find me, I need to have a life that is sober, that is of value, of principle, of integrity. I cannot have that if I am not firmly planted in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. I do this deal. I suit up and I show up. I want to share a spiritual experience with you before I sit down. And I've had many spiritual experiences, but one of the most beautiful for me is to look in the eyes of one of the ladies I sponsor over the flickering flame of a one-year candle. Having seen her come in the program holding her head down, broken and devastated from the disease of alcoholism, looking at her as she blows out that flickering one-year flame, that is a spiritual experience. This is a journey you must not miss. But if you want what we have, I firmly suggest you do what we do. Thank you.